Blog Talk Radio.
As the legend goes, an old Cherokee was teaching his grandson about life. He said to the boy, "A fight is going on inside me. It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, guilt, lies, superiority, and ego. The other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you, and inside every other person too." The grandson thought about it for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed."
Broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Ooh, mountains, we gon' walk it out, and ooh, mountains. And I'll rise up, I'll rise like the day. I'll rise unafraid, I'll rise up, and I do it 1,008 times again. And I'll rise up, I'll like the waves. I'll rise up in spite of the ache. I'll rise up, and I do it 1,008 again.
Come on, y'all, sing it. Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you're listening. Bienvenidos, ¿qué tal? Namaste, oki. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show, broadcasting live every Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, here on blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhouseeffects. That's the letter FX at the end. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosts and duties, holding down the other half of our hosts and duties. Some call him the Lions historian. Others call him Unc. I just simply call him my best friend, man. He's my dad, Bill Green. What's up, Daddy-O, man? What's going on, man? It's happy Monday. Good evening. Good show. What's happening? All that good stuff. How you feeling?
Wilfredo, my man. Hey. Now, some of y'all might not know why I called
my oldest son, Wilfredo. Well, uh-oh, it's not an original thing. You know, it comes from my oldest brother, Mick. Mick used to call me that, Wilfredo, and amongst other names. You know, he had about three or four of them, but Wilfredo was the one that stuck. So I just decided to channel it on down and started calling my son Wilfredo. It has nothing to do with anything other than that, Char. He ain't, you know, part Venezuelan or anything. and it looks like that name is going to die with you, man, unless, you know, you pop out another one with WPG the third, you know. So anyway, yeah, that's right. The story, man. So
right on.
You know,
wow.
Yeah. So there it is. Wow. Yeah. So it has its own history, man. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so things are what they are. It's crazy, chaotic. And, you know, it seems to be getting stirred up even more and more. It's like, you know, like a toilet paper on the stool, you know, the toilet spool, you know, that as it gets closer to the end, it goes faster and faster. And it seems right. Like that's what's going on right now in our part of the world. Chaos and confusion just seems to be going faster and faster, you know. So I guess the trick is not to get caught up in the whirlpool, man. So other than that,
right.
I'm going to get out the way. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Man.
You know, excited. Excited to, you know, as always, do the show with you.
Yeah.
Excited
Amen.
To follow
Amen.
Up. You
yeah.
know, all that
yeah.
stuff, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
There's so many different
yeah.
things. You know, I was thinking about you, though, earlier today. I didn't tell you before our discussion early, man. I was thinking about you. I was taking the mold off the bread. I had little sticks of mold on the bread. You know, it's like, you know, the struggle is real,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
man, I was
that's
like, man,
right.
What am I doing, man? The struggle doesn't have to be real. I can just remove
man.
This slice of
yeah.
bread and just, but it's like, man, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and Sue
yeah.
hasn't been here
yeah.
for, you know, like a week now. And so, man, I've just been, you know,
that's
just
funny.
Doing
that
my
funny.
Thing, man, you know.
Man, that is funny, man.
I
yeah,
forgot to
man.
Share that with you earlier.
Yeah, you know, old ways die hard, you know.
Hey.
It took me living with Sister Brenda to finally give myself permission to throw bread out. You know,
right.
I was just like, yeah, man, the middle is still good. Right on, man. That's funny, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to step out the way and let you get to your due diligence, man.
Right on, right on. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as most of you probably know, and hopefully you're scurrying away to look for you-know-what for you-know-what. But we hope that you grab a pen and pad, a pencil and paper, post-it note. I got a bunch of post-it notes up here tonight. Back of an envelope, a napkin, something to write with. We want to make sure that if you got any questions, comments, anything you pick up from our discussion, that you write it down. We don't want you to miss anything. We don't want you to forget anything. But we really hope that you might want to share some things. So if you do want to share some things, we got some ways you can do it. On our live shows every Monday and Wednesdays, you can call in. Our number here, I hope that you got something already. Our number here is 516-453-6094. Again, that's 516-453-6094. When you're ready to chime on in with us, just press 1 on your keypad. That'll put your number in our queue, and we'll bring you in as soon as we can. Maybe you can't call in, so you can utilize our chat room on the Blog Talk Radio site. You have access with this with your free Blog Talk Radio account, at the bottom of our episode for tonight. You'll see on the website there at the bottom of the page, you'll see the chat room, and you can engage with us there in the chat room. Already see Adam and Ray. What's good, Primos? Good to see y'all as always. Thank you for your support. Or we have Yeo Facebook that's always available for your ability to engage with us as well. We have an event page that we set up, and on the event page in the discussion tab, it is now open for you to post any questions, comments, etc. Of course, positive thoughts, etc. about the show. You can do so there on the page as well. So there you have it from your friends here at the Greenhouse Sex Radio Show. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
That's coming from the audience of millions.
The millions!
Oh, man. Man, you know, I have to go back into the Gandalf catacombs and archives of past shows and dig out, you know, how you started out bringing the due diligence, just to compare, man, because I swear, bro, it is smooth as glass. I'll be appropriate tonight. Smooth as glass, man. I love listening to you, man. So, so what's up tonight? You know, heck of a title, Our Children, man.
Yeah.
Spins me out, you know. If time allows, I want to talk a little bit about OPEC. He cracked me up when I mentioned it. He said, OPEC.
Hey, you pulled that I was not expecting
man,
that.
It snuck up on me, man. You know, it's in the spin cycle right now, you know. And the thing is, I'm just going to say this real quick and get out of the way all this. But the thing is, you know, oil prices, gas, you know, affects us in ways that us, meaning Americans, in ways that causes us to think that we could just flip a switch and change things back to where it used to be without wanting to hear what OPEC is. So anyway, that's all I'm saying, man. So go ahead on, bro. Where are we? Where do we want to start out with? I know we don't want to start out with OPEC, so I'm going to back off of that right now.
We'll see what's up with OPEC. I put that on my post-it note, so I already got that posted up here. But, you know, Our Children, part two. For those that missed part one, that was from last Wednesday's show. Please go back and check that one out. That was a heck of a show. And I was just reviewing and listening to that show right before we went on the air here. And, I mean, you know, that was really a good show. It really was.
Okay,
I mean,
let's make this one good, too.
Yeah, well, it was really a good show. So we're continuing our discussion from last week, Our Children. So it came from Vice President Kamala Harris's some responses from her late night interview with this cat, Seth Meyers. And she spoke about she used the term Our Children in regards to looking towards the future. And she talked also about climate crisis. And so she's been getting a lot of slack about this comment that she made, how she's using climate. Number one, they conservatives, I guess you can call them. I guess it would be the conservatives or whatever, you know, that they call it a word salad, and that she's just short of saying that the kids belong to the government. And but it's just this way of twisting words, if you will, and I'm surprised that it was taken so literally. And so these other people who I, you know, not really digging with, they have this gripe about what she said, and it's like they've taken it literally. And so the point of bringing it up was, yes, our children are important, our future is important. You know, climate crisis is important. You know, they went on saying that she appeared to just shorter saying the children should be the federal government's responsibility. And it's just amazing how sometimes words can be manipulated in this regard. I thought it was pretty simple and straightforward. And that's what prompted me to bring it up in Wednesday's show, which we're continuing to discuss tonight. You know, we all have responsibilities, I think, for the future. You know, we have responsibilities as we get older. We have responsibilities at work. We have family. We just have basic responsibilities really to take care of each other. You know, and we talked about understanding what it means to be of service to each other and things like that. And, you know, we talked about the village, how it takes a village to raise a child. You brought up some great points about falling off of the, we're stepping away from the collective consciousness. And we're getting more into this absolve of individual success and not really thinking about the collective. So that's, you know, we were just So we just continued this discussion for last week, and you threw out some great points, and as always, I didn't know if you wanted to hit off of anything that maybe you wanted to follow up from last week, or are you cool right now? How are you doing?
Well, first of all, a little clarification. The we for me was about black families. I'm not in a position to speak on the village as it relates to white families or other families for that matter in America. The entire village is in some ways a misnomer, because the entire village should include all Americans, but history says it doesn't. So I was speaking from a black perspective of the village, which the collective consciousness has to do with what the entire village not only constitutes, but what it wants to promote, and even the unhealthiest village will promote an idea of health if it means protecting its secrets. So it takes an entire village to raise a healthy child is the lost consciousness that I'm speaking about. That's my concern, that the village has gotten so stretched from, the village I grew up in has gotten so stretched now that much of what connotes the various values of the community I grew up in is something now that we seek to find in places that we migrate to, things that are already established that we as a people, try to integrate into being able to utilize and absorb whatever the resources are. I remember that in the community, in the village I was raised in, there was everything, that a community could want. They were all black businesses, whether it was a barbershop, whether it was a pool room, whether it was, in many ways, even though I went to a Catholic church where the priests were all white, the congregation was all black. And I like to mention that because, I was dragged to church. Well, I wasn't really dragged to church, but I went to church with my mother, and sometimes even my brothers went too. But the thing is, just about every young brother and sister in the church were brought by their parents. So I'm sitting in a pew, or for some who don't know what that means, a bench, where I'm sitting next to, a young brother and a young sister my age, all of us in tow with our parents. And I tell you, there is a sense of community in that regard, if for no other reason. When I'm sitting next to a young dude I don't know, and I'm watching my mother, in my case my mother, begin to, communicate or converse with, the parents of the male and female child, whatever the case may be that I'm sitting next to, there's sort of a unspoken camaraderie that starts to develop, a familiarity, something that we as adults know what I'm talking about, that the tradition still continues, where I can go anywhere in America, and I don't care where it is. And if I see a brother or a sister, chances are, without skipping a beat, we're going to acknowledge each other. And that's kind of what I grew up with a sense of. And I tell you what the value of that is. When I have that kind of connection, when I have that kind of sense of fellowship or community, it's kind of hard to see that brother as an enemy, and therefore even harder to plug him in the back because of some crap that's gone on in the hood as teenagers. It's rather than that, it would almost be a reaction of protection if that kind of violence exploded. So, that had gotten stretched out now, and as I see it, and it's like the village with a black theme tends to be more focused on a closed circle of family. It seems like the entire village really is just the family as a unit, and any other families that the unit connects with. It's like grown right from the living room, what the entire village consists of, which I think is a little bit different in the sense of then what do we show, what do we teach, what do we share, you know, with our young today. Now I'm, you know, the older one, so I don't get to be the child in this situation. And I don't, therefore, because of my experience in growing up, have a real good feel for what the child must be feeling growing up in this kind of village today. It to me looks like a somewhat fragmented, or what you said earlier, me orientation, you know, that is all about the me perspective of the child and not so much the us perspective as the village. So as someone who didn't grow up in that type of circumstance, I find that I feel displaced. I don't really know what the language of that kind of village is. And, you know, understand that I'm not talking about having my own, like, home and everybody living under my umbrella, you know, because I'm older now and all my children are grown. You kind of follow where I'm going with this? So what I see instead and what I witness instead is the way my children are dealing with their young and those who I'm around family-wise, you know, extended family, and watching how they, now grown, are dealing with their young, you know, and wondering, asking out of concern, you know, the positives and the negatives of the influence of my generation on what I'm observing as far as how the population of the third generation is being affected by the relationship I had with the second generation. It's really something, you know, to watch. And it also stirs up a lot of ghosts. You know, I was just thinking today, I was thinking about, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. You were thinking about what? Because, no, actually I was going to probably put you back on that path because I'm curious how that would go, you know, because we're always looking at, as we mentioned in our motto, if you will, you know, we're always looking at bridging these gaps of generations. And so, you know, you're speaking from your point and looking to like Jackson's age, Jackson's generation, you know, and making sure that bridge is somewhat balanced, but some of that has to do with the influence of, you know, from you and your generation. So it has no choice but to stir up, would you just call it ghosts?
The ghosts. Ghosts of Christmas past, the ghosts of my memories, the ghosts of my time growing up, you know, growing up as a young adult, growing up as a parent, growing up, you know, through the stages of whatever my challenges in life has been. You know, I'm thinking about your younger brother, Armand, and even now, even though he's almost 30, what is he, 28, working, you know, teaching in the Boston school system, married, you know, with a dog, you know, so they have their own lifestyle. Still, as his father, I think often about my impact on him as his parent, as his male parent, and concern, especially around when I left the home and he wasn't included in the conversation. But before that, I remember talking with the three of you one time over breakfast, and you, Armand, and myself, and we were talking about him being in high school and what would have happened if, you know, because I mentioned never saw him do his homework at home, and he didn't. He always did it at school before he came home. I asked, what do you think would have happened, man, if you had brought your homework home and before he even had a chance to take an in-breath? You said scholarship. But I thought about, you know, this whole theme of our children stirred up another aspect of that in me that I thought about. There has to be a reason why he didn't bring his homework home, you know. And his grades were okay. They were adequate. I mean, as far as I was concerned, I thought they were great. But his mother and I had a different perspective of that. You know, she was like a step above my okay. So where I would be okay with B's and C's, she was looking for nothing less than A's. And thinking about why he didn't bring his homework home, I worked out of the home. His ma didn't. So I was always there when he came home. And there were a few times in grammar school, not in high school, but a few times in grammar school, and maybe when he even first started high school, I don't know, when he would, you know, bring his homework home, and because I was there, I would be the parent that would work with him. I had no tolerance for that. I had no patience for that. I was horrible at that job, you know, to the point of just sometimes rendering him to shame because I didn't understand why he didn't understand his homework. But what I didn't mention was that I didn't understand his homework in the first place. So, but I was horrible at helping him with his homework. So, of course, when his mother came home from work, you know, sometimes she would also be faced with preparing a meal, not all the time. You know, we shared that responsibility, but nevertheless, still, whether she had to fix dinner or not, she would still come home from work and then have to take on that extra chore that wasn't shared between us of helping him with his homework, because I was just lousy at that. I didn't get any practice at it. You know, I was never schooled on homework at home. I was left to my own devices. You know, and, you know, grammar school, I did great. But high school, when I found out there's nobody really checking on me, oh, I bet, you know, I was off to the races. And all I had to do was lie and say, yeah, I did it. You know, I didn't, you know, and it was just my mother. She's a single parent. So there was nobody else around, you know. And so, you know, I didn't know what that entailed, but I took it out on Armand. You know, and I think that's why he didn't bring his homework home. You know, and that's a shame producer for me, you know, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think, in fact, talking about it in an open forum may give cause and effect for those to reflect on the relationship you all have, you know, with your young, you know. And all too often, you're right.
And even my relationship with Arma, not necessarily
absolutely.
Like me and Jackson, but just
absolutely, absolutely, the sibling issue definitely comes in play as well. You know, so you know, this theme of our children for me has taken on the added life of, well, what exactly does that mean in relation to the village? You know, how does the village fit into this now? Is the village, you know, as broad as it was, or is it more condensed, more of a closed system, you know, than an open system? Again, when I was growing up, it was an open system because every element of the village was present. My teachers, my protectors, meaning law enforcement, ministers, elders, you know, siblings, relatives, everything, you know, was present. You know, businesses, you know, grocery stores was not a chore, but a delight, you know, because going to the store also meant, you know, having a couple nickels and dimes maybe left over that I could grab a peppermint or something and, you know, nobody would notice, you know. And even then, too, you know, it's also something that, you know, is a lost element, you know, because it's just not the world we live in today. You know, yeah. Pop bottles, man, it was, you know, you got a refund, deposit, you know. Couple pennies here, and a family-sized Coke gave up a quarter, man. It's like a quarter. Oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, when you're like 9 or 10, a quarter, in the 50, late 50s and early 60s, a quarter, man, shoot. And real quick, and I'll get out the way, man, because I know you have stuff. You know, I talk with, like, my, you know, great nieces, and more so one particular great niece, you know, Mia, and, you know, because she's just passed, she's still in that age of losing teeth. So, you know, I joke with and talk with her about the fairy coming in, and she'd be getting $5 from under her pillow. Man, I'd be, man, I thought about that. If I was, like, getting that, I'd be knocking teeth out. You know, $5, and knowing it's going to grow back. Oh, man, anyway. That's her, man. And, you know, and I'll say things to her, like one of her aunts gave her some money for helping her aunt put together a wedding dress and gave her like a handful of dollar bills, and she pulled it out, and I'm like, you know, you got all them dollars? And she was like, oh, it ain't that much. And I'm like, man, what? I'm looking at it and thinking, man, it's like a bonanza. It's like a horn of plenty, you know. And she's like, eh, so it's just you know, it's something to just observe. From my perspective, you know,
yeah.
You know how the Chase system, how the GPD, how the gross national product of the family has just somewhat shifted, man. So go ahead, man. Let me wind down so you can get in, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me bring you back here. Let me reintroduce the show. Welcome to the Healthy Village Dialogue Hour with Will and Bill.
Amen.
Here we begin healthy dialogue within the village. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Yeah, when possible. What is that, you know, like, I'm looking at stuff like that says healthy family versus unhealthy family. Mm-hmm. You know, the healthy roles of children, you know, the unhealthy roles of children. I'm looking at this stuff and I'm asking myself, you know, from a cultural perspective, how do we define healthy versus unhealthy? You know, of course, my intellect says certain things are better thought of as being positive than negative, you know, or healthy than unhealthy, certain behaviors and so forth. But the black family as a system has not been researched since slavery, you know, where the nuclear family is really the core of family values that we operate from. Nuclear family meaning the basic family structure born from the 40s and the 50s, you know, because of the nuclear age. That's why it's called nuclear family. And that nuclear family is the one we saw on the early strains of TV that has and still has such a tremendous impact.
And we had a whole episode where you broke down the nuclear family. Yeah. So, ladies and gentlemen, go back and check those out also. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, no, and you ain't cutting me off, because I'm not going to, you know, even venture down into all that again. So, The element, though, remains to me still intact. What then is an unhealthy, or what is a healthy black family system, and therefore what is an unhealthy black family system? Or can we have an unhealthy, healthy black family, like a functionally dysfunctional black family?
Yeah, of course we're talking about the challenges of the black family, because that's what we can speak about, because we're black. You know, we can't really speak so much about other cultures, you know.
Right.
Because we're not there like that, you know. But you said roles, and you know, the healthy definition of roles, what's the relationship between like parent and the kids, right? The healthy relationship.
Well,
we need healthy, consistent relationships, healthy dialogues.
But the question still remains, what does that look, what sound like? What is, I mean, I'm agreeing with you. You know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what then does that, what is, you know, as in, if I, no, go ahead, man. Let me get out there. I apologize for taking you off your stride. Go ahead on, man.
I was just kind of really playing off of some of the stuff that even we talked about last week and just listening to you. you know, we talked about as our kids, as the children get older, you know, how well do we role model for them what healthy behavior looks like?
Yeah. Amen. Right. How well do we do that?
You know, we talked about how we, I guess in my generation, and even yours, of course, because you have children. If you have children, you want to protect them. You know, well, the majority of people want to protect their children. You know, but you said the worst we can do, though, is you said sell the lie and not confronting the issues. And so the question is, how then do we draw from the village? You know, how do we provide a healthy intervention, if you will, while trying to figure out who we are?
Well, herein lies the rub. Yeah, go ahead, man. Sorry.
No, that's what I was just going to just give it back to you. So, yeah, therein lies the rub. So how do we deal with that functional dysfunction? Because, I think that we know it's there, but how do we tackle it to not? I guess I don't know. Is it dealing with the expected confrontation? We just don't want to deal with the confrontation that may arise, and we just try to figure out an easy approach, a pillow approach to healthy dialogue. It seems like that's the struggle of just even starting healthy dialogue within the group, within the village, if you will. Is that
within the family?
Within
it's got
to
start there.
Sure.
You know, yes. I mean, it's got to start within the confines of the home.
Right.
You know, the home, you know, like the hut of the village, you know, it's got to start
yeah.
there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it has to also, you know, have blend with what the rules are, you know, and where does the rules come from? See, you know, this is, it's all so vague, you know, and, you know, black folks are survivalist, you know, meaning, you know, well, I shouldn't even, yeah, we strive to survive, but we call it success. So it's hard to clearly understand what the rules of success are when they're so driven by survival. You know, now, again, I'm just, because we are talking intergenerationally, so hopefully you can, you know, tolerate my making reference to when I was a child. When I was a child, you weren't here yet. You know, so I was being influenced by those that raised me. You know, in part, my mother, who was, like I said, I didn't even realize until I was an adult and sharing my story that my mother was a single parent. But she became a single parent. She didn't start out a single parent. You know, and, you know, she did something that none of her siblings did. She left her husband. She never got divorced, but she left her husband and took us in tow, and we moved in with her mother. So now comes the dilemma of an extended family, you know, village dynamic. I moved out of a village into another village as a cohabitant of an environment that was already established. And I also was immersed in a community that existed long before I showed up, you know, and reflective of those of my peers that I met along the way, value systems were immediately challenged, you know, which is what happens anytime you're introduced to a core of strangers. You know, that I don't think that's changed through the ages. But the conflict with me was we moved in, and I don't know this as a child, you know, we moved in with my mother's mother and my Uncle Harry, you know, and my two older brothers, you know, so it was four of us moving in with two people already established in a two-bedroom home. So all immediately boundaries were compromised. And one bathroom, yeah, it's kind of deep, six people. using one bathroom, you know. But as I began to branch out in the community, I started seeing that the way we lived was contrary to the way that mostly everybody else in the neighborhood lived. And that caused an inner conflict or the development of an unknown complex within me. You know, so to look at the values of the village of the 50s and 60s and reflect it back or fast forward to how you experienced your life growing up, there's one commonality we have. You know, we both were raised by single parents, single mothers. You know, I was not there, you know, throughout your formative years. I did not come back into your life until you were, what, 10, 9 or 10?
Yeah.
You know, and even though I made, like, guest appearances every once in a while, you know, it was never any consistency and no comfort in being sure of how I would show up. So, you know, it was a lot of gaps in your early life as far as your relationship with me was concerned. But the one constant was your mother. And therefore, whatever her values were, those were the values you experienced. Whatever, you know, her needs were, those were the needs you experienced. You know, whatever her wants were, those were the wants you experienced. I had no say-so about that. I had no input in that. You know, so our conversation, man, I was so elated to hear, you know, the time spent just the other day with you and your ma and y'all's conversations, because that to me is the idea, you know, when we can talk more openly, when we as parents can talk more openly with our young, regardless of how old they are, like you're in your 50s now, and you can't begin to imagine yet what a thrill it is, a satisfying experience it is to talk with you about, and I don't mean we just started when you were 50. I mean, our relationship has evolved over the course of 25, 30 years where we talk openly about themes, you know, of challenges in our relationship, you know, and how it had to find its own stride, how it had to find its own breath, you know, to evolve into what it's become today. But it's still, not too long ago, still had its rough spots. You know, I still remember, what, about 7 years ago, I think that was our last, you know, physical confrontation, not where we came to blows, but we had, you know, it had to be a neutral zone between us. And I remember telling your cousin Ray, when me and you were going at it verbally, I grabbed his arm and said, man, hold me back. Just hold me back, you know. First of all, because I had a robe on and I'd have on nothing underneath it, and I didn't want my ass to be flapping in the wind if we got to tussling. But I was asking him to just, you know, just hold me back, you know, because I can't, you know. And he did. And he didn't do it in a way that shamed me, like, oh, this old man talking all this, woofing all, you know, selling all these woof tickets, and he's hiding behind me, you know, like kind of how, you know, how dudes do in baseball. They all run out toward each other, then they all kind of hide behind each other before blows are thrown. So anyway, you know, the fact that we can deal with these things is reflective of the work we put in developing healthy rapport.
Yeah.
I don't know how that works today, you know, from an older black male perspective. I don't know what the trick is with, well, I only can observe it through how y'all do it. I look at how you struggle with the challenges presented to you with your son, you know, living in, again, you know, a cohabitant situation where he's amongst step people, you know, stepfather, step siblings, you know, and the relationship with you always has to, well, I'm saying, always has to be a diplomatic solution, so to say. You know, so I don't know, you know, what you two do. You know, I don't know how you, you know, deal with, you know, the challenges that you face in reaching a place of rapport with your son.
Yeah.
I only hope that at some point it's recognized by the both of you that it won't always be that way, whatever way it is, that it won't stay locked in a time. Now, that does happen, though. You know, that does happen where relationships are never, sometimes aren't celebrated, and therefore I'm permitted to grow. Often, resentments, you know, are born from a particular age that are never settled. So, you know, I'm not saying you, but like a black man could have a son who's now living in a cohabitant kind of situation, and resentments exist. Like when that son was 13, that son could be 36, but that resentment still defines the relationship. You know, so I'm hoping that you two have reached a place of understanding that however it is doesn't mean that's how it's going to always be. I think that is a point of healthy relating, that, you know, this shifting village, you know, really needs to have. Okay, man, I burned up way more time than I meant to. Sorry.
I think that, I don't know, maybe this is just me being hopeful for those that, well, you know, for those listening that have sons that are older than 16, you know, I expect, I would think that we could celebrate the growth of our relationship, talking about me and Jackson, because I think we're at a different level of our relationship, you know. And I can say that, I think I can say that because I remember talking with him about things that I did to him, because I felt, you know, in looking back, you were talking about how you were with Armand and his homework. That really kind of hit me a little bit, because I used to think about how I was kind of hard on Jax.
Yeah.
Like I would really go hard on that guy. And looking back, I was like, oh my goodness. You know, and I don't really know why. You know, it's not like you were like that. It's not like Mom was like that. But I just felt like
I wasn't there.
You know, I just, and maybe it was me being hard on myself. I don't know. But I realized that our relationship changed when I recognized how I responded to him, let's say, making mistakes, let's say, and from there recognizing it. And then from there having little discussions, you know, nothing deep, you know, for somebody at his age at that time, but just opening up that level of dialogue, at least to me, you know, that's what I feel like.
No, I hear you.
That we have that type of relationship, you know, but, you know, I mean, he's 16, you know, so, you know, a lot of us know what it's like to be a black male at 16, you know, even the ladies out there, what it's like to be a black person that's 16 years old in America. Number one, you know, so Ray, you know, celebrate the growth. Yes, sir. And thinking about, I don't really know the right term, but we talk about generational, not habits, but so like, I don't know, and I'm sure that you don't know what was your father's, what was James' relationship with his father? You know, what was,
I don't even know his father's name.
You know, what was my mom's,
I don't even know his mother's name. Yeah.
Mom's dad, his name was Monroe, right? What was Monroe's relationship with his father? You know, because your relationship with your father wasn't there, Mom's relationship with her father wasn't there. And we're talking about this yesterday. And it hit me, you know, I'm just going into, you know, her relationship with her mom, with my grandmother. But then she mentioned her father, and I'm thinking about you and your father, and I'm thinking about me and you and me and Jackson. Like, oh, shit, excuse my language, ladies and gentlemen, but like, you know, there's something I think that we were able to even break, if you will, because, you know, honestly, Dad, you had that opportunity to kind of not do what you did, you know, and make the effort to hold on to what every piece of the relationship we had left and that little piece that we held on to, we were able to make something new grow. But imagine how many people, how many families were in that same situation and they just let it go. You know, I was watching this Hulu series about Mike Tyson, just came out, called Tyson. And this is just based on what he shared, you know, with the public. And, you know, when he was a kid, he's in school, he had the lisp, and him and his mom is talking with the school, and the school's like, he's retarded, you know. And I'm thinking about you and how you had to deal with how they were trying to diagnose Armand needing special education, and how often our black families, you know, we've trusted the system. How many times have our black families had these opportunities to still find that little bit of that relationship that's still there within all the BS and the crap that we have to deal with. And, you know, and lost it. You know, we were able to hold on to it. So it's just those kind of being able to identify these moments between the generations, these gaps. I think these are those gaps where, you know, what is it in engineering when they build things, you know, and you have these gaps and you lose the support of like the bridge and stuff like that. So do we fix the gaps? Do we identify the gaps? Or we just let it, you know, let the bridge just kind of just do its thing and we get to it when we get to it, you know? But again, I guess we have to even identify that. I'm sorry. I'm kind of running on. You were about to say something.
Well, no, you know, you're not running on, man. You know, go right ahead. You know,
I'm kind of just being literal, just as far as the whole, you know, the bridge and the gaps thing. But, I just think that these are the type of things, even the littlest things, and thinking about how if we still have these opportunities to review and look back on our interactions with people in our families who are older than us and the people in our families who are younger than us.
Whatever perspective we start from, you know, the theme, you know, is born from the idea of the entire village. But I think what we have to accept, I'm looking at the clock, we're real short on time right now.
Okay.
So, you know, what we have to, you know, consider, you know, as a village, you know, generationally, how much the village has changed. And in a short period of time, it has gone through some real major shifts. And I'm not sure we as a people, once again, to my black folk, are keeping up with the shifts and the changes. You know, it's a very fragmented kind of existence that we experience in this country anyway, which has always been the case. But now with so-called opportunities on the rise, you know, and therefore exposures to competition being so different than just, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, I'll just go, 15, okay, 60 years ago, you know, everything on any avenue of competition is just so extreme. You know, my generation cannot fathom, you know, how your generation is dealing with your young from the perspective of what we know. You know, I mean, everything is so much faster. Information comes faster. You know, somebody told me that that children today don't even carry books anymore. Everything is like in computers or whatever the devices are, you know, and I can't imagine education without books. I can't. Does that mean it's wrong or right? I don't know, because I don't have a perspective that helps, you know. But then again, I can't imagine what it's like to grow up without encyclopedias. You know, I mean, yeah, Google's great, you know, but you got to know what you're looking for, you know, with Google. You didn't have to know what you were looking for in, with an encyclopedia. you found what you was looking for, but you went through so many other pages to get there and these unexpected discoveries. So, you know, with the village as it is today, it's expanded. You know, was it good or bad or indifferent? I don't know. But the thing is, it includes so many other aspects that it never did. You know, like when I was growing up, as an example, there was two things that did not exist in the black community, drug addicts and gays. You know, they just did. I mean, sure they did, but they were invisibilized, you know, by our parents. They weren't talked about. They weren't recognized. They weren't identified. They were ghosts of the village, you know. So we just grew up thinking there was, you know, there were no black homosexuals, and there were no black drug addicts. That's the extreme of the shift today. You know, and not only with the shift of these various identities, but the dialogue. And then your generation has to deal with something my generation just could not conceive of, this theme of violence, you know, as it's expressed with gunfire. Well, we had our gangs, we had our fights, we literally used the term skin in the game, meaning that's how we dealt with it, skin. You know, so it was like skin to skin. You know, I don't even know if violence with guns is healthier than violence with getting beat up. I don't know. I don't have the perspective of that. I know what it felt like to get beat up. You know, I don't know how humiliating it was, but I also had victories too, and I felt how positive that was. I don't think gunplay allows that flexibility.
I don't.
You know?
No, you don't have that. No, that's
so
not.
I don't have that perspective, but it must be something there that, you know, that allows, you know, what we call gangbangers today. Now, you know, they're gangsters today. They were gangbangers in my day. They're gangsters today, and I don't know if a gangster who shoots somebody down has that exhilaration of victory. Like somebody who just kicked your ass last week and you got back at him this week. And then you might get your ass kicked next week. I don't know what that looks like, man. So
I'm sorry. I'm just thinking, man, it's just another easy approach to things now, to dealing with challenges. It's all about finding the easy way out of things, trying to find the easy answers, the quick answers. I don't have time for all this stuff. I got the quick answer. So let me just go ahead and
cut
everybody down.
But everybody comes from somebody. So wherever anybody comes from, there is a place that set them loose. So the question is, what were the values? What were the parameters? What were the guidelines? Or was it something that happens in maybe a particular type of dysfunctional black family village where the young just get absorbed into whatever the peer structure is? You know, and is the family of elders been so far removed from that decision-making that, in fact, they do just leave their young alone to their own devices? But anyway, I guess maybe we can pick this up some more Wednesday, but I see we're out of time, man. So let me get out the way while you figure out how to land this airplane.
Let's figure it out. You know, let me say this and we'll close it out. I don't know, you know, is it right or wrong? You're talking about books and not having books or how would they do it. I guess one question we can look at is it effective? You know, what's the definition, of course, of it being effective for that group? And is it good for the people and how and why? That's my response to that, because that's a good point. Encyclopedias. So there we have it, ladies and gentlemen. That's our show for tonight here at the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. We provide an opportunity to exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe an even deeper connection with others and their experiences, especially if we share interpretations and feelings. Our phone lines are always open on our live shows, Mondays and Wednesdays, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Will. That's Bill over there. As always, we hope that you be blessed, be safe, And be yourself, amen. Because everybody else is taken. Be yourself, man.
Right on, Ray. Yeah, right on, Ray. Right on, Adam. And I see Miss Ariel joined us.
Right on,
baby girl. Yeah.
All righty,
man. Love you, son.
Love you too, Dad. As always, man, I enjoyed the show. Ladies and gentlemen, please be safe out there. Be blessed. And have a good night. Amen.
Amen.
Feeling this way, I guess I should be crying, but my heart just won't obey. If you'll stay, she'll be happy as I lie here on the rooftop in the rain. I